tweet at Today SOR.
Travel writer Fionn Davenport joins me now. Today, Fionn, you're bringing us on a journey to Italy on a budget, it has to be said. Now, it's, as we know, a hugely popular destination with good reason. I know you believe that Italy knows how to do tourism.
Oh, yeah. I mean, great art, historic monuments, stunning locations, some of the best food you're going to eat anywhere. Hardly a wonder that Italy has been, or has been for a long time, one of the world's most popular holiday destinations. 18th century Grand Tours when it starts, in a sense, the birthplace of tourism. To put it in a nutshell, Italy really knows how to do tourism. And it's worth bearing in mind that while the cost of living is far less in Italy than it is in Ireland, if you're travelling to Italy, the cost can mount, especially if you're travelling with your family.
Indeed. Now, are there less expensive regions?
Okay, so the rule of thumb is the further south you go, the less expensive everything gets. So that's accommodation, meals, everyday living. So, for instance, if you go to the northern lakes of Maggiore, Como or Garda, they're always going to be more expensive than, say, Lake Trasimeno in Umbria. Equally, you get a hotel room in Naples, it'll cost you less than its Milanese equivalent. Now, there is a caveat here, and that is demand. So you're going to get far more for your euro in western Sicily, so around Trapani and Marsala, than you would, say, in the east coast, where towns like Taormina are long-time popular tourism destinations
and
there, to generally fill
and there
up.
Are places that, like, I mean, Rome being an obvious one, Florence, Venice, where there are literally coming down with tourists. You might want to go to those places.
That's another thing. So one of the things that's happened, and in fairness, Ryanair really must take some of the credit, because the Deep South has opened up as a result of them flying into Bari, which is in Puglia, in the heel. And so these beautiful resort towns like Polignano and Mare have opened up to Irish visitors for the first time in recent years. Equally, you don't have to stay in Florence if you want to enjoy it. Like, not that far, like less 40 minutes by train, by local train, is Lucca, which is medieval, Renaissance city, equally, maybe not as equally beautiful as Florence, but very elegant. And as I said, just a short hop from Florence. So you can stay in Lucca, take a day trip to Florence and go back. And let's say, for example, Venice, which suffers terribly from over-tourism. If you absolutely must base yourself in Venice and you're not visiting on a day trip, only 10 minutes from the city by Vaporetto is Murano, which is one of the outlying islands. Much more convenient, less busy and less expensive.
Can I eat well without spending heavily, Fionn?
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Eating badly is quite the trick in Italy. You really have to work very hard not to eat well. And on the whole, dining is considerably cheaper in Italy than it is here. Now, it isn't to say that you can't splurge in a meal. You can find Michelin-starred restaurants or top dining spots in Milan or Venice. What I would say is stick to the Italian trattoria, which is the bedrock of good informal dining throughout the country. They're not particularly impressive looking, so many of them, but generally are focused on good home cooking. The things to avoid are restaurants where waiters are beckoning you in, menus with pictures of the food and in 10 different languages. You can almost take it as a rule of thumb that the food there, though not awful, is not going to be of the same quality as you will find in the standard Italian trattoria, which
is frequented. Up the side street.
Up the side street. And here's the thing, look, more often than not, I mean, one of the things, even the most out-of-the-way restaurant will generally have a menu in Italian and English. But on the off chance that you find a menu where it's just scribbled on a board and it's in Italian, there is a magical thing called Google Translate. So you just type the thing in and you'll know exactly what it is. One of the good options that I would recommend is the happy hour aperitivo. So for the price of a single drink, basically you just can pillage a buffet of antipasti. So they will bring you like lots of little morsels. In Venice, there is a lovely one. It's called the Giro di Ombre, or which translates as the shadow stroll. So as the sun sets, all these unassuming backstreet osteria, they serve up cicchetti, which is the Venetian version of tapas. So it's all these little snacks, along with half glasses of wine, which is always a better option in Venice than paying over the odds for in the same that I mentioned, this indifferent cuisine that really, and Venice can be a terribly rip-off city.
So, I suppose self-catering accommodation gives you other options, doesn't it?
Well, yes, of course. And that is, I mean, you know, Italy has an abundance of fresh fruit markets. So every town has a fresh fruit market. Supermarkets generally, the quality of the food in even your standard supermarket is really, really good. So cook it yourself. Now, you know, you're going on holidays, says somebody, and goes, well, what in the name of God would I want to be cooking for the family when I'm on holidays? But it is a great way of keeping costs down.
Now, talking about keeping costs down, what about accommodation?
So self-catering is the best way to keep costs down. Airbnb is both a boon to the budget-minded traveller, but also a curse, because it's much like it's happened in the cities here in Ireland. It's destroying the local rental market. I mean, without getting into the argument about what Airbnb does, but you cannot go to a city and not find an abundance of Airbnb options. I will advise, though, is that for the most part, in my experience, what I found with Airbnb, what they do is individual owners, what they do is they give their apartment or house over to an agency that might be managing dozens and dozens of these things. So effectively, it's like working for a big group. It's worth bearing in mind that accommodation rates fluctuate wildly according to the season. So Easter, summer, Christmas, New Year tend to be high season. Location is also an issue. Although Venice and Florence, not so much Rome, because Rome is so big, but Venice and Florence, which are quite small, visitor numbers are always going to dictate prices. So you're always going to pay high season prices from Easter pretty much to the end of September, I would say. Another good option is Agriturismo, which is farm stays. There's a bunch of organizations. So agriturismo.it is one of them that I would look at. But it's a lovely way of doing, particularly if you don't want to stay in a city. And then finally, let's look at offbeat accommodation. In the south, these Trulli, which are these conical houses, they've been converted into lovely B&Bs. Right next door in Matera, which is where they've just finished filming the new Bond movie, so that's going to become very, very popular, I would guess. But it's a UNESCO World Heritage town. It's absolutely gorgeous, and they have these accommodations, Sassi they're called. They're cave dwellings, but again, converted into beautiful boutique accommodations. Really worth looking at.
I'll take your word for that one, Fionn. How good is the public transport system?
Excellent. Absolutely brilliant. The old gag about Mussolini made the trains run on time. I don't know how true it is, but the trains generally run on time. And in a country that has a byword for inefficient bureaucracy, it's actually kind of an amazing thing that the trains are so good. The one thing to bear in mind is that you can get the regional trains or the express trains run by Trenitalia, which is the national consortium. They generally tend to be less expensive. Intercity trains are faster, and then there is they also operate these high speed trains. So if you see Frecciarossa, Frecciargento and Frecciabianca, which is red, silver and white arrow, and the private company Italo, they run high speed trains. Now they can be expensive, but otherwise if you avoid those, and the great thing, as anyone who's been to continental Europe really will know, is that the train station is in the middle of the town. There's no, I arrived, now I have to hawk my way in. Mm-hmm. You arrive
bang
right
in the centre,
absolutely.
Now, having driven and hired cars in a lot of European countries, the United States as well, I have to say I might draw the line at hiring one in Italy.
Do you know what? I mean, I'm half Italian, so I'm always loath to say anything bad about Italy, but car rental in Italy always comes with an issue. Now, having said that, I would rent from Hertz, which, because they're a big international brand, I've never had an issue. The cheap, you can go with like local, Locauto, Lisi's, Sicily by car.
Fionn, it's not the hiring companies I'm concerned at all about, it's the drivers.
Well, the driving is that, I mean, Italians will tell you they're brilliant drivers. It's the others who don't understand how good they are.
I have no problem believing that.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is make sure to examine the car when you pick it up for existing damage, any minor dent or scratches, because they take photographs before you get the car, just so you have a record of it, just in case. Remember that the collision damage waiver, which is the CDW, that's mandatory for all rentals. The rental company will often try to sell you a no excess or total cover at a premium. I mean, you can purchase that from a third party insurer. What I would say is, no matter what way you want to do rental, whether you have an excess or whether you eliminate it altogether, make sure to get a receipt for the final cost, because I have heard stories about all of a sudden, 3 weeks after your return, you're getting this mystery bill that adds an extra 500 quid because they've spotted damage on the car that you didn't see.
Okay, now any scams I should look out for?
So if it sounds too good to be true, it is too good to be true. So things to look out for in Italy: peddlers that sell luxury watches, the offer of good tailoring, and this is a very popular one, the fast track ticket, so you can jump the queue at a popular attraction. Because if you go to the big museums, whether the Vatican or the Uffizi in Florence, or the you want to go into the Campanile in Venice, the queues can be really, really long. You'll get punters going, no, I'll sell you a fast track ticket. You can get those fast track tickets online. Do not buy them from the punters. Go to those markets that sell leather goods. For the most part, it's faux leather. It's not real. It's cheap knockoffs. And then the other thing as well, and this is not just a problem in Italy, unfortunately, but pickpocketing can be an issue, particularly in busy sites where you get kids approaching you, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, like, your bag is...
Anything we can get for free, Fionn, or at a discount?
Well, okay, so all EU citizens under 18 get in free to all of Italy's state museums and sites. Under 25s get discounted entry. They're all free on the first Sunday of every month from Easter to October. And the other thing, well, it's not free, but discount passes. So all the main cities, Florence, Rome, Milan, Venice, operate their discount card, which basically is, depending on how long, 48 hours, 72 hours, 24 hours. And a bit like the Dublin Pass, to be honest. Heavily discounted, particularly if you're going to do an awful lot of sightseeing. It will save you as much as 50 or even 60% of buying single ticket entries to those attractions.
Now, finally, any other tips to keep the costs down?
Stand in cafes. Don't sit. Go into a cafe and look who's sitting. It's always the tourist. The Italian is always standing at the bar drinking the coffee or the aperitif, because if you sit down, as soon as you sit down, that coffee costs you twice as much.
I never knew that.
Yes, indeed.
Fionn Davenport, as ever, thank you so much indeed for that very solid advice. Thank you.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.